Thanks for listening to Fluff and Crunch, where we talk about the connection and sometimes disconnect between system, setting, and story in tabletop RPGs.
So, I know you haven't done any gaming because it's been a day. Okay, unless you had a busy night with your family out of town and out of the country, actually.
I painted.
You painted. You painted minis or like painted a wall?
I painted minis. No, okay. I painted minis. He's disappearing. I was painting General Grievous and friends.
Oh, that's cool.
I painted Darth Vader. I have to be really careful. He has four lightsabers and they are all super fragile. That is not a good miniature to have on the table. Yeah, he's getting broken.
I didn't do anything like that. I watched a TV show and went to bed. But today, I'm interested in this. We're going to talk about the fluff and the crunch, or the fluff versus the crunch, or the fluff and the sacrifice.
We're just talking about the crunch.
Oh, we are talking about the crunch. But I think, I think fluff is always implied by the crunch.
I'm loading Discord now, so I can. I think I'm pretty sure that the request for this was very clear.
That's true.
It was very, very clear.
And tell us who the user is.
That's what I'm looking up now. I'm trying to find it.
Now, interestingly, we did have a comment from last night on the really rapid reaction to the Star Trek Adventures release. We did have a comment. Someone asking which one of us is fluff and which one of us is crunch.
And I'm crunch and you're fluff then.
Well, clearly, but I don't think we ever like.
No, this is because we don't think of it like that. Fluff and crunch was the name you came up with, and I agree with it. And it works for multiple things. It was a user called Chaps Weekend. I wouldn't mind hearing about the crunch side of fluff and crunch.
Yep.
What are the crunchiest, most rules-dense games that are still decent or playable? Oh. Where is the line between role-playing and pure simulation? There's nothing there at fluff at all. Now, it's an interesting point there. What it was asking for is, what is the crunchiest game that's still good?
That's a really good question.
It's difficult to do that because I haven't played every single game ever. And I'm just going to run through some of the things that people suggested. Now, virtually every single thing people suggested, what they did, a lot of people were suggesting the classic, here is a really bad, overly crunchy game that no one plays. Well, straight away then, that's not a good game. So a couple of people suggested GURPS. I have never played GURPS. I looked at the odd book, and mostly I am put off because I looked at some books when I was at uni. So we're talking early 90s, mid-90s.
Back when
you
were still listening to Oasis.
No, I hate Oasis.
They
are my most hated band in existence. I'd rather listen to
Coldplay.
Coldplay's like next. I'd rather listen to some boy band than
sidetracking you.
Anyway, we're totally off. So a couple of people suggested GURPS. I've never played it. I remember looking at a book in the 90s. And thinking there's some good ideas in here, but the rule system seems overly obtuse. I remember looking at it again sort of 10 years ago, and it's still looking the same. And worse, the books still looked like they were formatted the same. Now,
yes,
it is entirely possible to have a very well written set of rules that's not nicely typeset and doesn't have lots of fancy graphics and doesn't have lots of nice art. I'm sorry, I'm a bit of a graphics whore. I like nice things. It's the same reason that I play brand new computer games. And yes, I'm sure some 16-bit games are really cool. But if a game looks like it's 20 years old, I'm probably not going
to
play it.
I want
to play modern stuff. And it's the same like a book. I like color art. I am put off by black and white text. I'm sorry. So GURPS to me, just I've never really got into playing it because I'm put off by things I've heard, the little I've looked at it, and the books themselves. So I can't comment on that.
I know a lot of people mentioned, and this was mentioned in the Discord, and this is something that gets bandied about. I've heard this bandied about, especially gamers of a certain age, is the vaunted Phoenix Command, which is like a modern firearms, modern combat game, and I never played it, so I can't. All I have heard is that it is extraordinarily crunchy. I can't comment on that because that is entirely received knowledge without any kind of explanation to it. So I can't comment on that at all. But I think going back to the original question, which I think is important, it's not like, give us your crunch porn game that's like horrible, you know, some kind of nightmare. I've got a few of those. But that is really crunchy and playable. And then where is this line or this idea? Where would we see like the qualifiers for where do you tip from playable RPG into more of a simulation because of the density of the rules? I think those are really interesting questions. So I'm going to do my best to stay disciplined and stick within those limits as we discuss this here.
Because we're mentioning a couple of the other ones. The other big one that people often mention for really crunchy game is Hero/Champions, because I think Hero is a generic system and Champions are the superhero.
Yeah, version. Hero system and Champions is the main one that uses.
Again, when I've tried to look at that, it looks incredibly complex. I've never gone any further, so I can't come with it.
Yeah, I know that I've never played it. I've never played any version of Champions or any Hero system game. And I know that I haven't even looked through it. So it's weird, actually, because I remember back in the olden days, I remember seeing all these games on the shelves. You know, I remember, you know, the original, the first golden age of RPGs, the 80s. I remember seeing all of these, but there were certain things I played. There were certain things I didn't play. And I was a elementary, middle, and high school student, and therefore did not have disposable income.
Yeah.
And didn't have, obviously, time on the planet to have collected a heap of stuff like I have now. So yeah, like Roman, I have played, I played the Middle Earth role-playing version of the Rollmaster system once, at like an all-night birthday party. We played Middle Earth. That's the only time I've ever played, the Rollmaster system. So yeah, we can only comment on the things that we've played, but again, I'm going to focus on that, which is playable and crunchy.
Just really quickly, while I should talk about Phoenix, you said Phoenix Command is a modern military thing. I played a game called Millennium's End, which I played quite a bit, and it wasn't super crunchy, but the one thing that it did have was crazily crunchy was when you shot someone, you had these little pictures of like an outline of a person or a person kneeling or a person lying down. And you put an overlay over it with a percentage thing and you rolled the dice. So if you got an accurate shot, you hit exactly where you aimed. But if you missed, the shot would deviate to somewhere else around it. So like you'd aim for the middle, you know, center mass, but you missed the center mass. You might fluke and hit somewhere else on their body, which made the game, you know, slow down a bit. But when we played that, we were playing that with Brian playing with one of those really massive big Barrett, like M281 kind of rifle, this huge things. And he would be standing a mile away shooting people in an encampment.
Yeah.
And it had rules for like, you know, the bullet, the drop over that distance and wind and stuff. But because I only really played that mostly with like one player, it was totally manageable. And when we did play it with three players, most of the party got killed because like something happened. So actually, I have loads of good stories about that game. So it can't have been that bad in play, but it did have that was one of the crunchiest things I'd played at that point. But there are three relatively crunchy games that I'm going to play on. And in all accounts, these are games which they are very crunchy. Lots of people say are too crunchy, but I have had fun with.
Yep.
Now, whether it's that's in spite of the system or because of the system, we'll get to that.
Yeah. And there are a few that I'll highlight too. Something I want to point out that you made me think of when we spoke actually yesterday is the idea of some systems are crunchy throughout when it comes to your experience with them. So in other words, if you're a GM, you have the planning phase, you have the at the table phase. If you're a player, you've got character creation and character management, and then you've got gameplay. And some games are really crunchy on both of those sides for GM and player. Some are crunchy for one versus the other, you know? Or maybe they're only really crunchy and potentially cumbersome or more challenging on one side of those. And there are a couple of games, one in particular that I can think of that is, it's far more on one side. It's far more on the GM and far more on one side of that half than both. So I think that's an important distinction to make. So how shall we proceed? How would you like to proceed?
Well, I've got three main games I'm going to talk about. Since you brought that up, I'm going to highlight a game, the one directly above me, that I actually only think is crunchy in one sense.
Okay.
And this is so Mutants and Masterminds. I'm going to talk about third edition because it's the most recent one. I'll quickly do it. First edition Mutant Mastermind was basically, it was the D&D 3.0. Yep. Third edition, sorry.
I played it. I had it.
It was third edition. They changed very little and just shoved superhero things. When they went to second edition, they tweaked it a little bit. Okay, trying to move it further away. By the time they got to third edition, it's quite a lot different, to the sense that some of the stats now are no longer called the stats they were in D&D. The stats also now are just the modifiers. There's none of those kind of like, oh, I have an 18 strength, so that gives me a +3 modifier. Your strength is just your modifier. So, you know, Batman has a strength of 4, but he has a fighting ability of 14. That's insane. Those are just his modifiers to doing things. Feats went, they're now called advantages. Skills still exist. And one of the big things that Mutant Master done right back, I think, in first edition is that it doesn't have hit points. You have a toughness roll. Now, actually, this is one of the two things I don't like about Mutant Master. In play, it's actually super quick. You want to do something, you roll a d20, you add your skill. You're either doing that against an opponent who has a defense stat, or you're doing it against a difficulty number by the thing. And that's it. You succeed.
Pretty standard.
If you're trying to do damage, the person you hit then makes a toughness roll where they basically roll a dice, add their toughness, and compare it to your damage value from your thing. That's it. So in play, it's relatively quick. Okay, there's a few extra things. The thing that makes it complicated is a lot of the advantages, which are basically feats. You have to know them. I mean, Batman, I can't even look at them. Batman must have like 20. There's no way I can, and if I'm a GM and I'm trying to play Batman as a friend because the PCs are playing things, that's a problem. But over time, you would learn what all of those mean. So I don't consider that to be a problem. The problem in Mutants and Mastermind is the character creation. It's incredibly in-depth.
Mm-hmm, I remember now, that.
The reason it's incredibly in-depth is you can make anything and you can do crazy variations of stuff. So you can have a really bog-standard character that's just, he's super strong, okay, and he has all these cool skills, and that's it, and that's really easy. Okay, so then that kind of character. But if you want a character that Batman's complicated because he has a utility belt. The idea is he can only use one thing from his utility belt at a time. So each of the things in his belt are in an array. They're like a sub thing. And you have powers that work differently depending on how you use them, or you can use this power, if you can transform it. Now, you can create almost any kind of superhero and probably other genres in Mutants and Mastermind. But that's the trade-off. To be able to have that freedom to create amazing characters and do almost anything, you probably can. It's super complex to do it. The kind of thing, you do need a spreadsheet or you need a ton of calculations. You can't, there are probably people who, because they've done it over years, can do it really, really quickly. I mean, I remember when that was the advantage, when I loved it, when Marvel Heroic came out, and it was so easy to go, I'm going to take my DC Heroes books and I can convert everything into this, because this is super easy.
Yeah.
But you can make super detailed characters that work exactly how you want.
Yeah.
And that's the trade-off. So that is a system, so what you said. In play, it is not crunchy. It's relatively, it flows very quicker. It's on par with 5e, and it's probably easier to play in the Safe Pathfinder. It's relatively streamlined because they've worked on it over the years to make it. And this is still like a 10-year-old game. I mean, if there was a fourth edition, I imagine it'd be even more streamlined.
But it's all in the original version. I mean, was like 20 years ago.
Yeah. But where you then have a lot of legwork as a GM, because if you're the GM and you wanted to create your own bad guys, that's a lot of work. And you have to have real system mastery as the GM, because you need to know what all of the different talents and advantages and powers do. The players don't. The players need to. It's one of those kind of games. The players just need to understand what the thing they're doing does. Yep. The GM needs to understand everything. So it's hard work for a GM. But I mean, I don't know if I played third edition or second edition, but I played a campaign with my then partner and Brian and his then partner. And so these are two girls that literally knew nothing about role playing, but we could play it. I mean, it worked fine. And one of the people had like an ability to take on the powers of a different animal, and they could just like add it out. And that's changed all their power sets. And I just had to make those up. And it worked. So you can do really, really cool stuff with Mutants and Masterminds. And I think that is the advantage of a crunchy system. You can do, and it has a mechanical heft. Yeah, in a narrative system, you can do anything. But a lot of the time in a narrative system, anything you can do feels the same. You know, all of this stuff you can do feels different because there's rules behind it. The trade-off is that, yeah, it can be really difficult to do that. So that's definitely an example of a system which it is complex. Compared to most superhero games we've seen in the last, 10 years, it's way more complex than all of them. But I still think it's worth it. Would I play it if I was going to play a superhero system? No, I always play whatever the Marvel thing is, and that doesn't have a license anymore. So I would play Marvel Multiverse. And if I was going to play DC, I'd probably still play Marvel Multiverse because it's quicker and easier. I haven't got the time to spend half an hour creating every character. Yeah. And that'd be a quick character.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, that's my
you
first.
You bring up a couple of really key points. And there's that differentiation. Like sometimes the mechanical burden, actually most of the time, the mechanical, let's just be honest, it's on the GM.
All the time.
All the time. Okay, screw it. It's on the GM.
Players be dumb.
Players can be dumb as posts. They just stare at their character sheets and be like, that. And then you're like, okay, let me show you how to. Yeah, anyway. we'll do an episode about dumb players. There's a question of, sometimes is the mechanical burden on the GM, is it evenly balanced between preparation, which I would say would include character creation because the GM is probably going to oversee or maybe be a part of that, especially if it's group character creation, or is it at the table during gameplay? And a game that I think of in this respect is Traveler. Is Traveler in virtually all of its versions. There are, and I'm probably wrong, but there are two, how's this sound? I'm not wrong in saying this. There are two versions of Traveler that don't use a version of the 2D6 roll, like the classic Traveler system. Mongoose Second Edition, Mega Traveler, all the versions from Game Designers Workshop, all the core mechanic is roll high, 2D6 plus a couple of flat modifiers, static modifiers, and you're trying to meet or beat a number. Okay, that's the basic. There have been two versions of Traveler that used a totally different mechanic. I'm not talking about those. Traveler is an interesting game in that it is actually, in almost always, really easy to run at the table. However, it can be very crunchy and involved when it comes to preparation. And that's almost always on the GM, that game. Almost. I mean, so star system creation, planet creation, sector creation, which is and subsectors, those are areas of space. There are rules and there are basic rules in the core rulebook for how to do all those things, and they're quite involved. And then there are additional books that make them even more involved. If your characters are going to go to Star System X and you, based on how they're using their starship, they're going to jump into the system X far from the planet, there are tables where you're going to need to figure out, based on their acceleration of their maneuver drive, how many hours it's going to take them to get to the main planet, to the starport. Like, there is that degree of simulationist, and totally simulationist, detail in Traveler. However, the vast majority of that can be done by the GM in advance to plan for and be ready for when the players say, oh, we're going to do this. You're just like, okay, that's going to take you this much time. Or you can just hand wave some of it. The vast majority of Traveler provides a massive amount of, like I said, just up to that edge of simulationist, like just heaps of numbers and stats and tables to figure out, how far something is away and how long it's going to take for communicate, all those kinds of things. But the vast majority of it can be done away from the table so that you're ready at the table where the game itself actually flows quickly. And actually, character management is really simple, I think. I mean, you have your stats. Your stats have bonuses. You have your skills. When you roll 2d6. If you have a stat bonus, you add that. If you have a skill, you add that. That's it. So that's an interesting one where I think it's entirely playable but it's a game that requires from a GM an interest in and a commitment to, unless you want to just hand wave tons of stuff. And then I think there's a point at which it's like, well, are you really having the traveler experience if you as GM aren't willing to wade into those weeds and come up with and use the systems that have been created to build this, not plausible isn't the word, but like internally coherent universe of like, this is how things work. So yeah, I think, yeah, Traveler's entirely playable, but it takes a committed GM who's willing to read the stuff. Big, big disparity between, unless you're asking players to make their own starships. but that could be fun though, because that's a question of economics. You know, you're looking at, okay, I only have enough money for a 200 ton space frame. If I want to make it go this fast in jump space, that's going to take up this much space, which is going to require this much fuel. And it becomes an issue of scarcity and economics, where you're trying to figure out, well, I want my spaceship to do this, but I can't because I don't have the money. Or forget about money, if that even isn't an issue. The darn ship can only hold just so much stuff. So where am I going to cut corners? And I mean, that's kind of fun. But yeah, for the most part, Traveler is super playable by players, easily playable by the GM at the table. But yeah, it definitely has a lot of heft to it in the preparatory phases. What's your next that's playable?
I'm going to leave the big one till last. So okay. Which one answer is? I'm going to go with this one, Anima Beyond Fantasy. This is a very little known game.
I've heard of it, but I don't know anything about it.
Yeah, it's kind of thing you see people recommend it and then say it kind of out of print. I think part of the problem with this is that it's not traditionally English. It was a Spanish company that made it. It then got translated into English through Fantasy Flight, which would now be Edge. But it was kind of always a bit weird in that, like, the Spanish were like 3-4 years ahead of us. So they would have a book which we didn't get. But they got a second edition, which we never had translated into English ever, which people are still banging on about. Like, are we ever getting this English version? Maybe. And you know, had a really niche audience. It's essentially like a fantasy role-playing game, but almost through the view of like people who are like anime stuff, because it's very, very open-ended. So when you create your character, I mean, you have levels, but you create your character kind of like you do in Mutant Mastermind or something like Heroes, where you have 600 points to build your character from. And then you pick like a class, but all the class does is give you different costs for different things. So your main attributes will cost differently depending if you're like a more physical or a more wizard.
That's an interesting approach.
Yeah. I mean, it's good because you can make a character more aimed to what you want. You can play a generalist who can be good at everything. And when I say everything, it has rules for sort of essentially martial arts superpowers, like ki powers, call it. And there's separate subsystems and powers for being psychic. And there's separate powers for doing magic spells. And then there's another subsystem for doing summoning magic. And then you can just have loads of like, you know, just be good at things, just have loads of skills on top of that. So it's really cool that you can make a character that you want, but the character creation is really horrendous. Okay, so far it's the same as Mutants and Mastermind. Where this thing gets worse is the in-play. So this little table that I've got, where is it? It's here. It's this table over here. This is the table you use in combat. Now, it actually works well. It's just the fact that you have to have a copy of it. This table is something like, I'm trying to work out how many columns it is. It's 10 columns. Which is not so bad, 10 columns on the table, can cope with that. But I think it's got about 80 rows on it, because the top half...
There are a lot of intersections on that.
It goes from 300 to zero, counting up in tens, and the bottom half goes from 10 to 400, counting up in tens. So yeah, that's like 70 columns. And the idea is when you roll to hit someone, you take the number that you rolled, whether you beat the defense or lost against the defense, compare it to this number. You then compare that to the armor of the person. That then gives you a percentage. You then do that percentage damage of your standard damage thing. So you're having to look it up on this little table and go, oh, I do really good. I do 180%. Then you've got to work out 180% of the damage you were meant to do. Now, that's a bit rubbish, and I'm sure they could have done it better. What is cool on this table is when you get a negative roll, like so you roll and you miss, it gives a chance for the other person to counterattack. And this was the first time I think I'd ever played a system where if you do badly on an attack, the other person gets a chance to hit you back. Because, you know, I'd play D&D, that never happens. I'd play, you know, the World of, not World of Warcraft, World of Darkness. That was never a thing in that. I'd never seen a game where, you know, it was always I attack, I missed. This next person, they attack, they miss. Savage Worlds, same thing. There's very, very few systems out there where if you fail to attack, that the other person gets an opportunity to counterattack. This was the first time I see it.
That's now, clever. 2D,
some versions of 2D20 does do that. But this was the first time I saw it, but not even that, you know, it's a scaling counter. So if you really fluff your attack, the other person gets a really good opportunity to counterattack. Now, it didn't really need this table. You could probably just come up with a much more straightforward rule that removes that table completely and just has a straight, like a much easier way of doing it. But that's kind of what this game is like throughout. There are tables upon tables for combat modifiers. If you do extra actions, what penalties you get. Oh, if you do extra actions, you also get a penalty to your defense and a penalty to your damage. And you can do called shots. And it's one of those things where it's, like you said, it's very, well, like our reader, viewer, whatever asked, it's very simulationist. So it's finding the character creation because you're trying to make this cool character, you can do all this cool stuff. But then you disappear down a rabbit hole of modifiers and modifiers and tables and more modifiers. And you kind of think.
So you're saying this is playable?
Well, it was what I know is that when me and Scott played it, we had a lot of fun, but we didn't play it a long amount of time. And I bought a load more books for it, mostly because you could do it. Now, I think you would have to, if you were going to play this seriously, you'd have to put some proper, like, you know, system master into it. Where I think it'd be awkward is if you had a bunch of people, and if you had some people that didn't want to put any effort into it and some people that did, I think it would be very difficult. You have to have people that are willing to, like, you know, build their character with the GM, understand what they want, build this really kick-ass character. But in play, it was really fun. I mean, like, the skill checks were fine. You're just rolling against the percentile, so it wasn't difficult. And the combat let you do cool things because you could do multiple attacks. And you could do, you know, these counterattacks. There was a lot of stuff I hadn't seen, you know. I think this was at a point where I'd played a lot of D&D where you get your attack or multiple attacks depending on your class, and that's it. There's no counterattacks.
Right.
Okay. There's no, like, I'm going to trade off my hitting. I'm going to try and do extra attacks where I'm going to hit less. Yeah, you know, I mean, I remember reading Feng Shui, which made out that it was going to be this super amazing combat system, but you still only really did I hit, because the system says, like, oh, encourage the players to do really cool stuff. But if you did cool stuff, it made it harder to do what you were trying to do. There was no incentive there.
Yeah.
You know, exalted at least when you
standpoint. Yeah.
Yeah. Exalted at least when you described your character doing something really cool, it gave you a benefit. Exalted ones that I should have talked about, but I'm not going into that because I've never really played it. But yeah, this I played a little bit. And we did really enjoy it. But I don't think we made the most complicated character ever. And making, on the plus side, making monsters, I'm pretty sure, didn't use the same rules as making characters, which was good. So at least you didn't have that thing of, like, ridiculously complicated bad guys to mess around with. But yeah, so it's a game where it is a game that needs a second edition.
Gotcha.
And from what I've heard about the actual second edition, it gets rid of a lot of the stuff they didn't need to concentrate. It was really good. You know, the character creation bit, I'll do loads of cool things, is really good. Some of the ideas in combat and the fact that, you know, you can have a character that can do magic and combat if you want, but maybe not be really good at both, you could do that. The fact that there are all these different subsystems, so you can do loads of cool stuff, is really good. The fact that they all work completely differently is not very
bad.
Good. Yeah. But yeah, you know, there's good ideas in it, and we played it and we managed, but it could be so much easier. Definitely could.
I'm going to throw out something that you and I have talked about, but I think for those listening, this is definitely a worth considering thing, is that there is always a trade-off. Sometimes highly narrative systems, or systems that claim to be highly narrative or really simple and streamlined, everything turns out to be the same.
Yeah.
Because there isn't nuance, there isn't texture, there isn't variability. I mean, I've found that, and I've said this with plenty of systems. I mean, Gumshoe to an extent, a lot of things feel the same mechanically. I still think that by and well, I mean, I remember fourth edition D&D, like every class at first level got a D8 damage something. You know, it's just behind, once you take away the one sentence descriptor, it's really exactly the same. But on the other hand, when you want to account for those kinds of things, you have to put in more layers, which adds complexity. That's just a trade-off. I'll throw this one out there as again a playable. I think you got right up to the edge of playable with Anima there.
No, I think it might definitely it's probably teetering over that edge. I think you have to be careful and picky and choosy about how you're going to play it and what you're going to allow. Like I said, actually, from a GM point of view, the monsters are much, much easier to play. It's the
Been a
characters that
character.
are insane, which is a nice change.
Yeah. I'll throw out a complex, crunchy game. Actually, not necessarily complex, but definitely crunchy. I mean, I think when crunch becomes complex is when you just pointed this out with Anima, where you have multiple detailed systems and they're all different. Like that's horrid. But here's a game that is very crunchy, I think is very playable, and I don't think is actually overly complex. It's Modiphius's 2d20 Conan. Conan has a lot of layers to it. There are a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of variability. The whole idea of reach,
That's what I was
you're
going to
supposed
say,
to
reach.
reach is like the one thing that everyone I know who runs Conan like ignores, or they forget, rather. I forget it.
I didn't last time, and I have to say it actually made the game
Yeah.
play better because it
Did it?
makes a genuine difference between whether you've got a spear or a
Yeah.
sword or a little dagger. That playoff between, you start off the person with the spear has the advantage, but if you can get inside
Yeah,
that,
then
now the
meaning
dagger
you have
guy.
an advantage and they have a dis, and that
Yeah, so
makes sense. Now
I really like once I realized it.
they brought that back with Cohors Cthulhu, from what I understand, which I don't have anything to do with otherwise. But Conan, you think about it, you have mental attacks, you have displays, you
Woo.
have ranged, you have melee, you have a lot of different effects,
Yeah.
and there are.
Magic.
There's magic. Magic, although magic is the one part of the sorcery. Sorry, sorcery is the
Sorry,
one part of the
sorcery.
system that I'll point out as being, well, in typical Modiphius fashion, it's not well explained. And so it's hard to get your head right. There's a lot of house ruling and just decisions of this is how we're going to do this at our table. That's life. But yeah, Conan 2D20 is, was, whatever you want to call it, because it's not in production anymore. A system with a lot of moving bits and parts. It's one of the few games that I would insist, unless someone really wants to wade through books, you use the digital character generator, which you can still find online. Use that instead of wading through all these books to try to make a character. Because, and there are some funky things about character creation, about how you shift points around between your attributes and things like that. That seem a little bit, to me, even now, after I've played it a bunch and run it a bunch, it seem a little like odd and not necessary. But the difference, though, with Conan 2D20, as opposed to something like this Anima thing that you just talked about, is that the system is in t it's coherent.
Yes.
It's 2D20, and so every question you have to answer with the dice, the same. You go through the same process and you draw from the same types of variables. So Conan, I mean, if I know that, it's hard to find. You've got to find it on the secondary market or the secondary digital market. It's
Subtle.
anyway. But if you enjoy a game with a lot of tactical options, a lot of really detailed options for combat. But you also want to have a like a more of a, as you and I, cinematic, flexible side, to instead of like I'm wedded to a grid, like fourth edition was. This
Yeah, it's
uses
insane.
narrative zones. But yeah, if you want a lot of different variables in combat and figuring out ways to like synergize between these different kinds of things, Conan has got a ton of great options that all operate within a coherent system. So I think Conan is entirely playable, but as it's an older 2D20 system, definitely like way out there on the extreme of the, in the crunchosphere for that overall system.
I mean, for 2D20 games, yeah. I have said repeatedly that I prefer that end of the 2D20 thing. To me, it's a shame. I think maybe it's part of the reason I kind of quite like Fallout, because Fallout was the first one that felt like it was trying to move back towards that end.
Yeah, or it like stood pat.
Having, obviously, we've only got one game that has a second edition. Seeing what happened to Star Trek, I can imagine if they'd kept the license for Conan and done a Conan second edition, Conan would have become more like Acton Cthulhu. I feel like Cohors Cthulhu almost is, you know, Conan second edition. I think that would be a shame, because I think you would lose something. I think you would take out a few too many rules and a few things that actually makes Conan things. Like Infinity. Infinity maybe has a few rules that aren't that classic. We've already said it a bunch of times. Not well explained. But the hacking system is really, really good. It's an awesome hacking system.
Yeah, it is.
Just not well explained. When you work it out, it's really cool. You know, we've played it and it was great. And I love Infinity. And I think if I lost some of the crunchiness of Infinity and there was an Infinity second edition, well, it wouldn't be as good. It's just flat out. You know, Fallout's great because it's a little bit crunchy than Star Trek. I don't mind Star Trek not being crunchy because Star Trek doesn't need to be. It's not about the combat. Right. Acton Cthulhu to me sometimes is a bit too on the, you know, you can make a bunch of players and they all seem very, very similar. You have to basically make someone a magic character to make them to differentiate.
Well, you know, it's like this. So it's, why does an MP3 not sound as good as a full CD quality version of the same song or a vinyl version of the same song? Because it's 1/10 the size. You had to squeeze something out. You had to buff the edges. You lose the texture. There's just no way around that. So yeah, I agree. Fallout is probably the crunchiest of the actively supported 2D20 games. Although Infinity is still alive, but I don't know the extent to which it's supported.
I mean, I guess it's we know there. Infinity is still alive when it gets another book.
It's just a good point. It's there.
I need to go back and play Infinity. I feel like I've been saying that for about 3 years.
You have. Okay. Yeah. So I've hit Conan.
So you said Conan.
I did. So you've hit Mutants and Masterminds and Anima. And I'm guessing that other thing is lurking and you're going to talk about
it. Right. Well, remember, this is why we are talking about crunch, because you don't like Shadowrun because of the fluff.
That's correct.
You are wrong. No. Anyone who has read or played Shadowrun knows actually, so you got to remember, how is Shadowrun managed to get to a sixth and it'll be seventh floor? How has Shadowrun got more editions?
Oh, yeah, there are plenty of people who like
D&D.
It. There are a lot of people who like Taylor Swift, too.
Yeah, but it's because of the fluff. Loads of people like Shadowrun because of the fluff. They like the universe.
Totally.
Loads of people
I've heard nobody talk about how they love the system. You're right.
No, exactly. People, you know, the people like the mix of, you know, of cyberpunk and, well, yeah, actually cyberpunk, proper cyberpunk as well, because you are fighting against the man usually. So, yeah, cyberpunk and the hacking and all of the stuff that goes with cyberpunk with magic and elves and dwarves and
dragons.
All right,
get to it, damn it.
Yeah, I'm just making the point. You don't like it because of the fluff and this is why
we're
doing crunch. Yeah, if you ask six Shadowrun fans what their favorite edition of Shadowrun is, you will probably get seven technically. I'm ignoring Shadowrun Anarchy. Shadowrun Anarchy is an attempt at a narrative version of Shadowrun that somehow managed to be neither simple in terms of a proper narrative game nor effective at being an easier. It's just it's a complete balls up. They completely dropped the ball. So really, I'm ignoring that. I'm going to talk about fifth edition. Okay. So first, second, and third, I've looked at, I've never really played a lot. And so I can't really comment on them. Okay. Fourth edition, they kind of rebooted the system quite a lot. Mm-hmm. And fifth edition it has some things in it to change how certain things, there were some problems in fourth apparently. So they did things in fifth. I think a lot of people would actually say fourth is the better version because the things they did in fifth to fix the problems in fourth, people didn't like. Sixth, they then did things to fix the problems in fourth and fifth and made an even worse job. Technically, it's easier. Right. Why is Shadowrun so complicated? I will read you straight out of the book. And it, oh, an example, hey, get this though, at least it has examples.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, just to get an idea, like for start, making characters is horrible because, I mean, it has to be. You have to. You can have a character that's really well skilled. You can have a character that's got really good physical attributes. You can have a character that can do magic, that has loads of money so they can buy all the guns, that has loads of cyberware, that has, I can't remember what I've said now, you know, they can do summoning. Because there's so, kind of the other two games, same thing. Because your characters can do so many different things, obviously yeah. character creation is a pain. Actually, yeah. I would argue that character creation is easier than both of these other two, because the way you do it, you kind of say, well, I'm going to, you in the decent versions anyway, you prioritize, right, I'm going to have skills is going to be my big thing, attributes my second, money's my third, I'm not going to be able to do magic at all, and I'm going to be a human, so that's a species thing. So you have this priority table thing, which then gives you different amounts of points to spend in different areas, and it actually makes it a bit more manageable. It's definitely in fifth and sixth. Fifth is horribly complex. So yes, character creation is quite in depth. When you come down to it, you are just, you have a bunch of stats, which are generally D6 dice pulled. So if yeah. you need to do something, you're rolling stat plus skill with a load of D6.
You're rolling a crap ton of D6s.
Yeah, like properly. You're rolling like, if you know, if you're doing it correctly, you're rolling 20 plus dice. And that is one of the reasons people do like Shadowrun. Okay, now some people will be like, if you're rolling more than 10 dice, that game's dumb. I am one of those people that are like, no, I am quite happy rolling 20 dice. You know, I play Warhammer where me and Brian have to roll 20, 30 dice yeah. in
and
one go.
And you're fine with that.
And we're fine with that. So I don't mind playing a role-playing game where I have to get 25 dice and roll all of them. Because, you know, I'm probably only counting fives and sixes. When you start going through the combat section and you get to the actions and you realize the combat actions has simple free actions, well, there's eight of them. Simple actions. Well, there's 20 simple actions. Complex actions. Well, there's another sort of 10, 15 of them.
Let me stop you. Let me stop you here. Is it complicated because it's hard because there are so many options? You're buried in so many options?
Yes.
Or is the adjudication of things itself complicated? Like, you know, I'll just jump in with this really quickly. One of the things that to me makes a game like crunchy to the point where the more steps, the stupider it is the more steps it takes to resolve a question. Like, yeah, well, you have this modifier and then you have to go to this table and the table gives you a number and then that's your modifier. And you know, again, yeah,
luckily,
it's like going to the DMV.
Luckily, it's not
that. Like
when
that or what?
No, when it comes to combat, I'll read you an example of combat, which actually, if you break it down into its steps, it's no worse than, it's not really any worse than 2D20.
Okay.
Realistically. All right, so the guy's doing an attack, blah, 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 modifies his attack, turn out and cut his favor and give him a plus one dice pool bonus. Now, this is the kind of game that the kind of like various version of D&D, there are a lot of modifiers, but realistically, there will be the modifiers you already have built in because, you know, you're a cyborg and you have a sight and that, you'll already have that on your character sheet. So you don't have to worry about them because you'll have them written on your character sheet. You'll have the situational modifiers, but you would learn them pretty quickly, or you'd have, it's kind of, we've said when we play 2D20, you will have a sheet in front of you with like momentum spent.
Pretty much, yeah.
And a couple of other things like what do the effects and qualities do? You could get away with a sheet of paper that does everything a player needs to do. All right, cutter rolls unarmed combat 4 plus specialization, cyber implant weaponry 2 plus agility 4 plus modify 1 for a total of 11 dice. You would have three of those already on your character sheet. You'd already know you were rolling 10 of those. And you roll it now. This is the thing that then made fifth edition a bit crap. He uses his physical limit for the test, which is 6. What the hell? Essentially, pools got so big, they put limits on how many dice you can roll. And that's the rule that no one liked, which is why fourth edition might be better. He rolls and he gets 8 hits. So he's rolled a bunch of dice. He's got 8 things. The other person is now on the defensive and gets his free defense test. The modifiers come out to -1. He rolls the things he needs to roll. He rolls 6 dice and gets 2 hits. All right. So the first guy has 4 more hits than the other guy. So he succeeds. Okay. That, you know, that's like kind of like 2D20. Then luckily you get a set damage value. It says the base DV is strength +1. He has a strength of 3. So the base DV is 4. Plus 4 for the net hits is a total of 8. That's straightforward. You've taken the how many hits you got or how many net hits you got, and you've added it to the damage value of the weapon. You don't have to roll, luckily. What then does happen is the person being hit has to roll for their armor. They roll dice and they take that away. It doesn't actually have any more dice rolling than 2D20 or most games. There is an attack roll. There's a defense roll. You compare. And then there is a then there's a damage roll. The damage roll here, though, is for some reason you roll for the armor to reduce the damage rather than rolling the damage and taking away the thing. So there's no more dice rolling there than you're seeing in 2d20, other than the sheer quantity of the dice. Yeah. But there are just so many little modifiers.
The quantity of dice in each roll.
Yeah. And then the thing that then really makes it horrible is that, yeah, but if you've got a hacker who's in the Matrix, there is a different subsystem for that. And if you've got a rigger who controls vehicles, then that works differently.
Okay, an issue, obviously.
Which is why, lots of people, when they play Shadowrun, go, right, no one be a hacker. If we need someone in the Matrix, we'll use an NPC. You know, you just have an NPC do it. And, you know, you find ways of getting around some of the horrible stuff so you can concentrate on all the cool stuff. It's one of those games, when I've played it, I've gone, right, let's just ignore some of the more left field modifiers, and it's easy to just kind of, we're just going to ignore. So it's what you do with a lot of crunchy systems. Ignore some of it and it's fine.
There are elements of the game, call them like modules or silos of the rules that you can get away from. You're not stuck with them. It's not like, I was looking through, I mentioned yesterday that game Time Lords, a time travel game from the 80s from this really minor gaming company. And I was reading over the rules again this morning, not because I wanted to talk about it, but I was just curious, like, how does this, I don't remember. It's been a really long time since I played the game. And it has this nightmare of a universal modifier table where every single modifier, it's +3. Well, now I have to go translate, because your stat is whatever it is, I have to go take that +3 and modify that for you, but his stat is 17, so I have to modify it differently for him. Again, these multiple steps to answer a single question, that to me is where the crunch gets into stupidity and like the attempt at simulationism. That's usually, I think, where crunch goes nuts, is when the authors are trying so hard to make it realistic that they end up making it too cumbersome to function.
It's like we said in Conan, if I was running Conan, I would probably, there would be times where I'd say, well, let's not have a PC sorcerer.
Oh, definitely
let's,
not.
Let's leave sorceries for NPCs, then we just don't have to worry about it until we have an NPC sorcerer who's a bad guy. Well, and we can worry about it.
And even then, you know, you as GM can just surf over those rules. Look at there's so many different, I mean, sorcery is a category. There's so many different things that fall under that in Conan. You could just decide on your own, like, the players don't have to know what rules I'm doing. I'm going to keep myself honest by spending some threat periodically and say, this happens. Hey, that person, your patron suddenly, like, all the blood sprays out of his eyeballs and he drops dead next to you. And so you just spend a couple of threat and, you know, Ragdar the sorcerer runs out of the room. Do you actually have to have a rule and a power behind it? No. No one's ever going to know the difference.
No. I mean, that's the thing. So, I mean, part of the
ways around it.
One of the things that can be fun about Shadowrun is all of the cool little things you can do. You can have a character just really skilled, or you can go really into your gear pool and have loads of cool weapons, which all have loads of modifiers, or you can be one of these martial adepts that does cool martial arts stuff, or you can do magic. And they have all got slightly different rules, but by having slightly different rules, it means they are working more to how they're meant to work.
Yeah.
One of the problems with the narrative version, the anarchy thing, is that almost everything you could do was just extra dice. Yeah. Oh, I'm a martial adept. I get extra dice to hit. Oh, I've got a big gun. I do extra dice when I attack. And everything just felt the same. Mm-hmm. There was no real, it meant that, you know, it didn't make any difference. And it took money out of the game as well. You got paid in like karma or something. So it just didn't make as much sense. One of the things in Shadow, you know, you will get paid in XP, so you can skill up. But you also get paid in money. Right, well, I can spend
which
that on better
gear. Which
is then
within the world itself.
Yeah. And so then that it makes more sense that you can actually know I'm going to buy better gear, and buying better gear, then you had choices. Do you go for the really expensive cyberware, which takes up less of like the amount of cyberware you're allowed to have, or do you go for the really crap cyberware, but then you can't have much of it? You can only do that kind of stuff in a really detailed system. Now, yes, there are 100% points where, you know, they've made mistakes in the system. Like the idea they put this limits in to stop people rolling too many dice, but then kind of messed up other things. There probably are too many modifiers, but it's trying to find that sweet spot of, well, if we don't have enough modifiers, everything feels the same.
Yeah.
And this gun is the same as that gun, or we have too many modifiers and now it's just too complicated. So trying to find that sweet spot is difficult.
I ran into this, and I can see where this happens. I can see where mission creep in terms of rules writing happens. because I experienced this when I was writing Eris. I wanted to keep Eris somewhere between Octon Cthulhu and Conan. You know, that's where I wanted to put it in general. And I remember when I wrote the first version, a draft of the first version, I realized unintentionally that I got into the mode where I was starting to write rules for everything. It becomes very easy. You write a rule for one thing, and then you think, well, there's some other thing that's analogous to that, or there's some other question that structurally is similar to, so I've got to write a rule for that, I've got to write a rule for that. And then I remember I felt kind of cheap when at a point I was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to write this thing and say, hey, basically everything else in the game is based off this core mechanic. And then here are some ideas about how to deal with it in different situations, but I'm not trying to answer all questions. I actually felt like I was being cheap to the purchaser. Like, I'm not answering all your questions, but I don't think that you should do that. Back to our original point, or one of our original points, is there is no sweet spot. It's because so much of it is personal preference, but
yes,
there's always going to be the trade-off between simplicity, which comes at the price, you gain simplicity by giving up texture.
Yeah.
But when you gain texture, you are going to lose simplicity. And so then the question is, how much are you as a GM willing to invest time and thought into this? And also, will you get players who meet you there? Because the more textured the system, the more it asks of everybody at the table. And if you have lazy players, then it can get really frustrating. But then on the other hand, if you just have a really simple system, then everything is vanilla.
Well, even some relatively crunchy systems can boil down to that. That's why I like systems as options. I mean, that's why it's funny when I've gone on Reddit at times and go, I want a system that can do this, 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 and this, but it's also simple. And people are always like, well, that doesn't exist. And it's like, the reality is, you can't, if you want options, whether that's in character creation or combat or in playing the game, if you want options and variety and texture, like you said, the game is going to be more complicated and it's not going to be as quick. But you're absolutely right. It does depend a lot of its personal preference. Sure, like me and my players can cope with a much higher level of crunch than some other people can. Like I said, you know, just looking at 2D20, some people look at, well, you've given Conan as an example of like the upper end of, you know, crunchy things. Conan to me is fine.
Yeah.
I could go, you know, a little bit beyond, I could go beyond Conan, but I'd only want to go beyond Conan in terms of crunch if it was giving me something back.
Yeah.
Now, something like Shadowrun is probably going to, there's too many modifiers, but I can just ignore them.
Yeah.
I don't have to. And look at this table here, environmental modifiers. And it's exactly what you said. In 2D20, that would just be an increase in difficulty by one or two, and you'd make a judgment call. This has got like a whole table with a whole bunch of different numbers.
But
just
again,
not necessary.
You can, it's like if your car stereo is really complicated, but you can get it to play the music you want it to play. You're like, I'm just not going to fart around with those other pieces and parts. If doing the core activity of the system is constantly complex, that's a problem. That's when things get stupid. So always a trade-off, no sweet spot, totally personal. Got to make sure the GM and players are on the same page. How's that?
Yeah, I'm definitely glad we've moved away from the kind of games where you looked up tables, like you mentioned, which unfortunately Torg still does. But any game where to do anything, you have to roll and then look at a table and the table gives you a modifier. No, just roll some dice.
No.
Roll some dice and the dice tell you.
Don't give me a number and then based on that number, ask me to translate it into a different number, which then I go back and use. Just get me there.
Yeah.
Get me there. Yeah. All right. There it is. The fluff and the crunch. They operate in tension, but we need them both.
Yeah. Now I can play the crunch without the fluff, but that's miniatures games. No, that's not
exactly
true. I still have fluff in my miniatures games because I'm playing narrative ones.
That's the wonderful thing about games is that there are umpteen million different games that you get a different experience out of. And a war game is going to give you a cardboard chits. War game is a different kind of experience, like at the strategic level than like a crunchy tactical, like playing Battletech.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Know what you want and go after it. Don't try to make something do something it's not built to do.
There we go. So we hope that was a reasonably crunchy talk about crunch, the people who asked for it.
Yes.
I enjoyed talking about it.
Me too.
And there we go. Don't forget to like, subscribe, comment.
Join the conversation. Tell your neighbors, tell your friends.
Yeah, give us feedback. This whole episode is proof that we do actually read the Discord and we will accept suggestions.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Buy our merch.
Oh, you have merch. Yeah, sorry.
I don't.
Javaris,
I have a game I wrote. But no, there are no collapsible drinking mugs. There are no keychains. There are no branded highlighters. Sorry. All right.
Thank you, as always, for listening to Fluff and Crunch. You can join our Discord. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel, all through the links in the show notes. Thanks again. Have a great day. We look forward to talking to you.